Dan Riccio. It is Sportsnet tonight here on Sportsnet 650. We've been talking about Sandalgate throughout the day here on Sportsnet 650. Secret Santa giveaways today at the station. Steve Darling gifted a pair of children's sandals to his recipient, which did not go over well here at the station. It feels as if it's some sort of a re-gift. Got this text in asking you for your worst gifts or re-gifts that you have either gifted or you have received. This comes from Jason in Surrey. He says he once got a used Starbucks gift card. A used Starbucks gift card. How do you give somebody a used gift card? That's not a gift.
Was it like $3.10 on it? Or?
Right. It's like you can maybe get yourself one coffee. Not even like a latte or one of the fancy drinks. You can only get yourself a regular coffee. Man, that's awful. Whoever gifted you that, Jason, is an absolute savage. Just a savage. Can't be doing that. Used gift cards. Unbelievable. Keep sending them in at 650-650 on the text line, or you can tweet us at DanRiccio650 and at Sportsnet650. I'm trying to think of some of the worst gifts I've been given. I remember one time I was when I was much younger, I was gifted like a PlayStation game of some kind. And for whatever reason, it got thrown out later that day, like put in the trash. Like, I guess it got mixed up with the, you know, wrapping trash and not being real trash. And my father was just like, ah, I'm throwing everything in the garbage, and gone went the game. All right. It's Dan Riccio. It is Sportsnet tonight here on Sportsnet 650 Vancouver, and we are going to talk some baseball here. Andrew Stoughton going to join us. He is of BlueJaysNation.com, and the Blue Jays have been eerily quiet here this offseason, and maybe nothing is in the pipeline until after the holidays. And Andrew's on the line. All right, let's bring in Andrew right now. Andrew, what gives? Why is everything so quiet in Blue Jays offseason land?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the question everybody's asking, I guess, right? I mean, obviously things were slow early on with the Ohtani thing, with the Stanton thing. There's still a lot of trades to be made, a lot of players to be signed, I think, as well. And so, yeah, it's slow for a lot of teams, but it's definitely getting frustrating for Blue Jays fans, as my Twitter mentions tell me constantly.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, they're watching teams load up around them, and they're still, you know, a bunch of pieces away, I think. They're a decent team, but this thing where they're saying and insisting that they're going to keep Donaldson, they're going to try to contend in 2018, it's looking harder and harder to do if they don't make any moves. I mean, I think obviously they will, but there's going to come a point where the paths to do that start to dry up.
Now, in your opinion, what is the holes that are most pertinent right now to the Blue Jays that need filling?
I think it's the outfield at this point. I mean, I'd love to see somebody who can, you know, maybe play a little bit of the infield and take everyday bats in the outfield. I mean, I think Elvis Diaz is a guy who they think they're probably going to get a bunch of bats out of, you know, be it at second base, be it at shortstop, just because those guys are going to get hurt at some point inevitably, or going to need some rest at the very least. And maybe in the outfield as well. But I think another player like that, another versatile guy, would be a great thing to add for the team. But, you know, either corner outfield spot, I think, would be a significant upgrade. But you can't overlook starting pitching either, I think. And that's something that they have to consider about 2019, 2020, if they can bring in someone with, you know, extra years of control. Because, you know, Jay Happ, Marco Estrada are going to be free agents at the end of the season. So the rotation is really going to be up in the air at the end of this season. But that seems, you know, there seem to be bigger questions, more pressing questions than worrying about that just now. But yeah, I guess it's the outfield and the starting pitcher that they really need to find.
Now, it feels like those items are going to come through trade. But I guess, you know, there's still the opportunity for some free agents. What are some names that you are looking at that make the most sense to fill those holes?
Jay Bruce said today that, you know, he would love to land in San Francisco. He's a guy who I'm kind of lukewarm on anyway, but would definitely make a lot of sense for the Jays, especially on like a deal of, you know, 3 years. Like, I think four was probably be too much for him. Lorenzo Cain is a guy who I think they would have some interest in, but is you would have to give him a 4 or 5 year contract, and you wonder where the Jays are going to be in years 2 and 3 of that contract and 4 of that contract, you know, before the Vladimir Guerrero Juniors and Bo Bichette start to come up and populate the big league roster before it really turns over from what this era of the Blue Jays is. And is that a guy that much money to have around in that time? But those are a couple names that, you know, could fit the bill. But I think you're right. The trade is probably the more likely path they're going to go down in terms of adding pieces.
Now, Anthony Alford, I know Baseball America released their top 10 Blue Jay prospects, and Alford was named the best athlete and was number 3 on that list. He did get a look last year, also broke his hand while he was with the Blue Jays because everybody who played in the Blue Jays outfield got hurt at some point last year, it seemed, at least. Where does Anthony Alford fit into all this? Is he fighting for a job at a spring training, or is he already penciled in?
No, you know, I think he's in Buffalo, to be perfectly honest. And you know, that's no knock on him, but I think it's sort of a situation where you saw what Kevin Pillar did last year when the defensive metrics kind of weren't up to the level that they were in the previous 2 years. We kind of know what Pillar is as a hitter. I suspect that unless they move him, which I don't think they're going to do, I think it's a situation where they're just going to let somebody take his job from him. And I don't think it will necessarily take a whole lot before Anthony Alford makes the case that he needs to start getting playing time ahead of the line. I mean, he's a good defensive outfielder. He can play center field. And, you know, he's a little green. He could still use more time in the minor leagues for sure. But he looks like a guy, you know, in the Baseball America profile that they wrote about him, you know, top of the lineup, kind of a bat, great speed, great defense, maybe going to be a little bit of power in there as well. You know, I think they called him an above average regular, not an all-star. I think I've seen scouts say, you know, maybe he'll make an all-star team a couple times in his career, not, you know, a perennial one, but that's still a tremendously valuable player and a cheap guy. And maybe somebody, maybe if he would had a little more experience, they would consider moving Pillar and just giving him the job to start the season. But I think right now, Pillar is a well-liked guy. He's a known quantity. His defense is still very good. There's a lot to like about Kevin Pillar, despite the fact that, you know, we have to watch him take 600 plate appearances. I think that he's probably entrenched there until changes sort of start happening at midseason.
See, I'm glad, the Kevin Pillar thing, I mean, I know he has been great defensively, and he still makes some wow plays, but there were fewer wow plays this year, and just the ongoing, like, if his bat stayed the way that it was for the first 6 weeks of the season, it would have been awesome, really cratered after that, and I just, unless the Blue Jays really fill out the rest of their lineup, it's just tough to stomach so many plate appearances with Kevin Pillar.
It is. It'll be, I mean, I think the idea is that it'll be better or easier to stomach those plate appearances without, you know, 600 also going between Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney.
Fair.
And last year it was just so miserable for so long in the season. But yeah, I mean, I think you can hide Pillar a little bit better, especially knowing that that's such a good glove at such an important position. But also, I mean, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm certainly listening if anyone wants to come and offer me something for Kevin Pillar.
Yeah, I would be too. Andrew Stoughton, our guest here on Sportsnet tonight. He of BlueJaysNation.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Stoughton. I know we've talked recently in the last couple of weeks. Oh, there's a line brawl right now in the Calgary-St. Louis game. That's great. I know we talked a lot about Josh Donaldson in previous appearances you've had on the show. But it doesn't go away. Like, you know, as much as Ross Atkins keeps saying, yeah, we're not trading Josh Donaldson, it's like nothing ever stops these rumors from continuing to build. It seems like a snowball that just won't stop growing. And now the St. Louis Dispatch is saying, yeah, the Blue Jays aren't even talking to Donaldson. They actually might consider trading him. Like, I don't know what to believe here, but, you know, there's this story's certainly not going away, and it may not go away until the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, I think that, you know, once they add some pieces this winter, assuming that that's what they're going to do, I think that, you know, the story will will go away a little bit, but it's always going to be under the surface. You know, anytime they lose a couple games at the start of the year, people are going to start thinking about, what comes back for Donaldson when the inevitable sell-off happens, which I think is, that's what they're going into. But I think it will subside a little bit if they actually put what looks more like a contending roster around him. But yeah, it's as far as the Post-Dispatch piece and the idea that maybe they are agreeable to trading him. I don't think there's anybody who's untouchable, so I think that's why they're continuing to listen. I think that St. Louis obviously knows the situation that the Jays are in, looks at the landscape in the American League, looks at what the Jays roster is, and thinks, hey, we should be able to sell them on making this deal with us. I can't blame them for that, but obviously the Jays don't seem very interested in doing it. They want to continue to put a good product on the field and hope for the best in terms of contending, which is a debatable aim. I think I'm okay with it. I don't need to see a terrible year that's over before it starts. I'm happy to have a little bit of hope, but yes, there's long-term goals that have to be considered as well. So it's definitely something that I'm sure is tempting the Blue Jays, and that's why they're still taking calls from the Cardinals and maybe whoever else. And if he does go on the market, it's a real game changer for the Blue Jays. It's a real franchise-altering deal, no matter what happens. Also, they could just re-sign him, which I think a lot of Blue Jays fans would be happy to see happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've just seen some of the vitriol, I guess, coming from the Tampa Bay trade today. And, only Deadspin, because the Rays don't really have any fans. But, Deadspin writing about the face of the franchise there, Evan Longoria, and how Tampa Bay selling him off just to get rid of some salary and shed that kind of thing isn't a good look. And, Blue Jays fans would be much more vocal, I think, if the Blue Jays don't make a serious attempt at re-signing Josh Donaldson. Finally, the hope. We talked about it. The Baseball America piece. Their top 10 Blue Jay prospects. This is the one thing to be excited about with the Blue Jays is, while things have kind of soured at the major league level, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro have done a pretty decent job of rebuilding the farm. And it's you look at some of the write-ups that Baseball America has for some of these Blue Jay players, and it's not hard to get really excited.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, credit to Alex Anthopoulos as well, because obviously Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Right.
came from him. And,
his last
and
gift.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy who BA was saying, he as a top five kind of prospect in the game, they were comparing him to the Trouts and the Chipper Joneses and the Teixeiras and real superstar kind of guy, while noting that there's obviously risk in any prospect. But when you get a guy who is viewed that highly by that many people, that he's accepted as being a top five prospect, there's a little more certainty on that. Like, those guys end up being valuable more often than, if it's a guy who just cracks the top 100, for example. And also Ben Badler, who wrote the piece for BA, had a chat today where he was saying that for him, at least, though he's probably the high guy on Baseball America or among the evaluators there, he said he thinks Bo Bichette is a top five prospect as well, which is amazing and very, higher than I've heard anybody say in terms of ranking Bichette, which is also, an extremely exciting thing for Blue Jays fans too.
Hey, Andrew, always appreciate your time, man. Have a happy holiday season, and hopefully the Blue Jays start making some moves soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy holidays to you too, as well.
There he is, Andrew Stoughton, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. The Blue Jays still waiting to make their moves, and the Mariners have obviously been active so far this offseason. They just missed out on Shohei Ohtani, but they did acquire D. Gordon. Look, I know the Blue Jays and fans probably feel like they have to go out and make a move to make something, to get excited, to get competitive, to do all those things, to keep up with the Yankees of the world and the Boston Red Sox. I don't necessarily agree with that. Like, I think you look at the Blue Jays and you go into this offseason thinking you're third best already to the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, and you still remain that way. but your path to the playoffs is through the second wild card, is through maybe getting some luck in the division. You know, that doesn't change. You know, the Blue Jays' goal is not to think about what the Red Sox and the Yankees are doing. The Blue Jays are thinking, how do we get to 88 wins or 90 wins? You know what I mean? They're not thinking about, hey, the Yankees did this, so we have to go out and do that. No, no actually good franchise thinks that way. I mean, we know the Yankees and the Red Sox maybe get themselves into arms races sometimes, but it's stupid. It's unnecessary.
The proactive versus reactive argument?
Yes.
Well, do you not think, though, that part of the Evan Longoria situation is a reaction to the Stanton trade?
I think the Rays are just the Rays, man. Like, they're looking to dump money whenever they can, you know? Like, they're a shrewd franchise that probably realizes, well, not realizes, it's there for everyone to see that Evan Longoria is not the star third baseman he once was, and he's still got $86 million left on his contract. So if you can offload that, like, sure, sign me up. You know, it's a difficult situation, right? And
it's a sad state of affairs for baseball in Florida, though.
Yes.
When you're between the Marlins and the Rays, and who are stuck in Tropicana
Field.
Tropicana Field.
They're probably best moved out. You know, the Rays are actually the prime candidate to be moved.
The whole state is pretty bad for professional sports in general.
Yep.
Other than, I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing well on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly won the NHL battle for Florida. The Dolphins have a few followers.
Yeah, the Dolphins they're a mess. Like Miami, it's, and even the Heat, you know, the Heat at their peak pack the building, but, you know, you have a lot of things to contend with when you're in Miami, like the beach and the nightlife. And
even the Jags are not a powerhouse as far
as
attendance goes.
The Jags are terrible. yeah, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not a huge draw. You know, Tampa Bay is just, at least the Rays, they're not even in Tampa Bay, right? They're in St. Petersburg. So it's gross. And the Rays are going to continue trading off guys. As soon as they know when a guy is a year or two out from free agency and they know they can get a massive haul for them, they move on. The only reason they didn't trade Alex Cobb before he hit free agency this year was because he had Tommy John shortly before becoming a free agent, a year and a half out from free agency.
And as I said to you leading up to the show today, Chris Archer, the pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, has got to be the next guy out the door. He penned a heartfelt goodbye to Evan Longoria today. And, you know, any time that a player says that and they are approaching their not only free agency, but the end of their peak years as well, that they're going to want to go to a winner. They're going to want out.
Well, they got Archer on a peachy deal too, right? Because they signed him really early on in his career and long-term gave him that security. That's what teams like Tampa Bay try to do. Teams like Tampa and Pittsburgh, they lock up young players really early into their service time and try to buy out a year or two of their free agency in exchange for long-term security going toward that player rather than the player betting on himself to maybe hit that home run in free agency. It's an ongoing conversation, but again, look, the Blue Jays, they're going to make some moves. They're probably not going to be flashy moves. They're not going to get you super excited, but if they have better health this year, that alone should get them to being about a 500 team, and you add a few more pieces to what they currently have, and then you're looking at an 85-86 win team, which would have been a wild card team last year.
See, I would say that they have the potential to even be better than that because the pitching was so decimated last year, not just losing Sanchez for pretty much the whole year.
Yeah.
Stroman was great. There was no doubt about the fact that he performed pretty much all season long, but you didn't get the real Marco Estrada last year either. Marco Estrada was...
Well, you got two Marco Estradas. You got the one that started the year awesome, and the one who was in the middle of the year awful, and then he closed out fairly strongly as well.
Right. So if they get the real that Marco Estrada back, that alone,
yep,
will make them a 500 team. And then add
Aaron
Sanchez. Yeah, and Aaron Sanchez.
I mean, if Aaron Sanchez is healthy, there's no, like, you know, that gives you a really strong rotation, 1 through 4, essentially, with Jay Happ.
Two of the largest criticisms in the signings were giving Justin Smoke a 2-year contract at $8 million and extending Jay Happ for 3 years, bringing him back. And Jay Happ was nothing but worth the money that he was given last year as well, too.
And Happ and Estrada becoming free agents at the end of this year. It's going to be a weird year for the Blue Jays. If they end up in a good spot, they hold on to those guys. If not, they're going to have a major sell-off at the deadline. It all depends on those first 3 months of the year, which makes it so much more intriguing in those first early months of the baseball season. It's Dan Riccio at Sportsnet tonight. Send us a text, 650-650. Tweet us at Dan Riccio 650 and at Hockey Minister. Canucks and San Jose Sharks tomorrow. We're going to get into a little bit of NBA chat next with Josh Eberle. Raptors are on fuego. And the Houston Rockets might be a legitimate threat in the West. We'll ask that to Josh next. It's Sportsnet tonight. I'm Dan Riccio, Sportsnet 650. Good God, yes, it's auspicious, man. Oh, gosh, good night. It's come back. Who's that? Yeah, my escapades exceed Caddy Escalades. I best behave to the rhythm of justice. Slaves selected brave. My lecture made extra. 831, Dan Riccio, Sportsnet tonight, Sportsnet 650 Vancouver. I survived my first snowstorm in the city of Vancouver.
You know, that's an accomplishment.
That's producer Ainsley Scott, who yesterday was just livid with the people of Vancouver who have not yet fixed their winter tires onto their automobiles. Are you still? Did you calm down? Did your blood stop boiling?
I wasn't really angry. Angry wasn't the emotion that I have.
It seemed angry.
Disgust is okay. Closer to it. It's more of a, you know, and it's just this sort of like, oh my gosh, every year. Yeah. Every year, people. You know this is going to happen. It's going to get a frost. It's going to freeze. Or it's going to rain, or we're going to get freezing rain, and then the roads turn into ice, and you're going to be at work, and then you're going to try to get home.
Try is the key.
Try.
Key word in there, right? Oh. It was not fun, you know, and I looked out the window, and it was just not stopping, and I had some Christmas shopping to do. So I did the thing that most smart people should do in this case. And, you know, I live right next to a train station, so I hopped on the Canada Line, and I took the train to the mall and made my Christmas shopping, got my Christmas shopping done during a snowstorm without driving. And I was pretty happy with myself, you know, because I could see on the roads the madness that was ongoing. Any hilled area was just an absolute disaster. It was also dangerous being a pedestrian with ice piling up and just getting shelled with some slush on the side of the road would be gross as well. But it happened. I made it through. We hope all of you did as well. And by the way, don't tell this to Ainsley, but I don't yet have my winter tires on my car. I have an appointment for Friday morning. Not happy about it, but I don't drive much. I walk to work. I can take the train if I want, if I need. So things are pretty easy for me. It's Dan Riccio. It is Sportsnet tonight here on Sportsnet 650 Vancouver, your home of the Canucks. Send us a text 650-650 on anything we are discussing here today. Canucks and Sharks tomorrow. We'll get back into that discussion later on in the show. We'll talk to Zach Devine of The Athletic about the San Jose Sharks. and talk some NFL at the top of the hour with Mo Moten as well. But joining us now is Josh Eberle of Hoop Mag. Thanks for doing this, Josh. How you been?
I've been good. You?
I'm great, man. Good to have you back on the show. The Houston Rockets, what an incredible story they are right now. I think they're 13-0 when Chris Paul is in the lineup. They've won 12 straight. I think they only have one loss since the start of November. They've been an incredible story. Their style of play is part of the story. But again, the ultimate question is, can they actually mount a serious challenge in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question right now. And honestly, it's tough. I run a round table for Hoop every week, and that was one of the questions I asked the guys this week was, you know, they've been so amazing, and they were essentially a top five team when Paul was out, but Paul comes back and they got better. Their offensive rating jumped up 70 points. Their defensive rating went down a couple points. Like, they got even better. They're looking like a historic team. But is there such a thing as peaking too early, and is it sustainable, you know, in a half court, slower paced, drag it out series against the Warriors? And I mean, it's tough. You know, you saw tonight Chris Paul goes down. They're missing Clint Capella, and they, you know, they kind of fall apart against the Lakers despite James Harden having, you know, another awesome game. And you kind of wonder, you know, durability-wise, Harden and Paul have both been dinged up an awful lot in the playoffs. They both had some, you know, performances you'd like to forget. So I can't say definitively at this moment. I have a lot of confidence in them taking it to Golden State. But to this point in the year, they've been the best team in basketball, and I think that's worth celebrating. Hopefully they can sustain it and we get a good series.
Isn't the way that they play part of their idea of how they can contend against the Golden State Warriors? Like, they chuck up more threes than anybody. Like, it's ridiculous how much they are throwing the ball up from beyond the arc. But isn't that part of it? Not as much as it has to do with personnel, but also the style that they've employed. It's all about beating the Golden State Warriors, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And I think they knew that getting Chris Paul. I mean, Chris Paul has had his problems. You know, Chris Paul's still a very good defensive point guard, but he has had his problems in the past with Steph Curry. James Harden has had problems on defense against basically everyone. Just the individual matchups are going to be tough, but this team on the defensive end. But offensively, this team is, you know, a well-tuned machine, and we're only 30 games in. You think about, you know, they have one of the all-time great offensive minds, and Mike D'Antoni has shifted the way the game is played, and he's just so smart. I mean, they were talking, I think it was on NBA radio, I heard him talking this offseason about how he just knew that if you wanted to compete with the Warriors, you need to be shooting as a team, you know, above, to have a true shooting percentage of over 60%. I mean, he's just a very aware, smart coach who knows where the numbers got to be if you want to sustain an offense that can actually challenge the Warriors. And I think they are, you know, prepping for that. I think they do know the challenges they face on defense, adding Tucker. But again, the Warriors are a mammoth, and they're only two games back in the standings, and they've had Green out for a few games, Curry out for a few games, Durant missed some time. I mean, they're an absolute juggernaut.
That's the problem, right? I mean, the Golden State Warriors, as much as, you know, they've kind of stumbled through the early part of the season, it seems like they're still 24-6, and, you know, they're right there with the Houston Rockets, even though the Rockets have won so many games in a row. I mean, once the Warriors peak, I mean, they're uncatchable.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a great tweet the other night. I can't remember who threw it out there, but someone was saying that the Warriors' backup plan is literally to let Kevin Durant do whatever he wants. And I mean, like, how amazing is that? You have maybe the second or third best player in the world, a former MVP, and the backup plan is, okay, you know, Steph and Draymond are out. We can't really do what we normally do, so we're just going to let the MVP try to get us a couple regular season wins. I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, if you looked at this Warriors team this year, you would say they've been kind of lackluster. It's been a slow start. They're not really engaged in games until the fourth quarter, but they're winning 80% of their games so far this year. I mean, they're bloody insane.
Josh Eberle joins us here on Sportsnet tonight talking NBA. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they obviously went all in this offseason as well, bringing in Melo, bringing in Paul George, and they're basically a 500 team. Why isn't it working yet?
I mean, there's a lot of things that haven't really gone well for them offensively. Defensively, this is a really good team, and I kind of felt like their potential to stretch Golden State, if they ever reach their ceiling, might even be a little bit better than Houston's, because they have bigger, longer bodies on the perimeter to really move around defensively. But offensively, woof. Like, there's a stat the other day that Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook are ranked 31, 32, and 33 in shooting percentage of 33 players in the NBA to take over 15 shots tonight. Like, they just, the offense has just not worked. These were three of the top five in isolation scoring last year. Together, the three of them combined are scoring less points in isolation than James Harden is by himself this season. They just cannot put that ball in the hoop, and it starts with Westbrook. Unfortunately, the reigning MVP has not figured out when he should be facilitating and when he should be looking to score. And as much as I want to blame Carmelo Anthony, because he's always been, you know, a little dense, let's say, in where he should be in the offense the last few years and when he's got to give it up and move the ball. I mean, this is Westbrook's team. He's still leading the NBA in shots. Now, a week ago, I looked at that stat and I was just baffled. How does Russell Westbrook lead the league in shots when they bring in Carmelo Anthony, they bring in Paul George? But he is, and he had almost, a week ago, he had almost 200 less points than James Harden on something like 100 less shots, or on a couple less shots. Like, I mean, it's just nuts. Like, the offense has not come together at all, and Russell Westbrook's really going to have to adapt to make that work.
Josh Eberle, our guest. All right, let's look a little bit at the Eastern Conference. Is Kyrie Irving the MVP of the league right now?
No way.
No?
It's LeBron,
right? Or
it has to be LeBron or Harden. And as much as the Celtics have been great, I think you could actually argue Al Horford's been just as valuable as Kyrie Irving. And I'm not... You know, I mean, this was a team that was the number one seed last year. I'm not sure that Kyrie Irving's numbers have been better than Isaiah Thomas's numbers last year. I'm not trying to beg on Kyrie. He's been excellent. He would be on the ballot today. He would finish top five. But I just think if you look at what LeBron's doing without Thomas there, with Wade coming off the bench, you know, as good as they've been, especially the last month and a bit, and then obviously the Rockets being the best team in the NBA and Harden keeping them in that range while Paul was out, I think those two guys got to be one and two in some order.
Are you worried at the amount of usage LeBron is going through right now? I mean, his numbers have been ridiculous. What did he have, 13 straight triple doubles or something like that? And he's just been incredible. It's like he's not aging. He's just getting better with age. But at some point, like, that usage has got to be worrisome, no?
Yeah, I mean, he's the active leader in minutes. He's gone to the finals 6 years in a row. Or wait, is it seven? 6 years in a row.
We lost, you know, count, I mean, Josh. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's a walking individual dynasty, and he's playing 40 minutes a night right now to get Cleveland wins against teams like New York and Atlanta and Brooklyn. And while, I mean, he's probably never been better offensively, and it makes no sense because I feel like 3 or 4 years I've been, you know, prepping, bracing for the inevitable, that his ball is going to start to roll down the hill, but he just keeps coming. But the same thing with the Rockets peaking too early. I mean, you know, LeBron has been very, very fortunate. Obviously, you know, he's a freak. He's a phenom, and he's really, really – he takes his training very seriously, his diet very seriously. He hasn't missed a lot of time in his career, but, you know, as you get older, you're playing these 40-minute night games back-to-back. The team needs you constantly. He's running the offense, you know, the triple-doubles, the rebounds, the playmaking. They're asking an awful lot of him at this age. And, I mean, he's LeBron James, so throw everything you've ever known about an athlete out the window when discussing LeBron James. But still, he's still a mortal human being.
The Raptors have been really good. And I saw a couple of pieces come out last week on whether or not the Raptors' changes this year in their style of play is going to amount to better playoff results. What have you made of the Raptors so far this year, and have they done enough to really change the culture within that team?
They're interesting. I mean, they're quietly on the national scene, just getting wins. I mean, you know, they're the fifth or sixth best team in the NBA. You know, other than Houston, Golden State and Cleveland. I mean, they're right there with Boston. They're right there with San Antonio. They're right there with everybody else. I mean, they have – Kyle Lowry has been really streaky up and down. I'm not sure if he's 100% right, but DeRozan has taken another step forward, and OG has been – I mean, shooting, what, 43% from three as a rookie. You know, they're trusting him defensively on Anthony Davis, on James Harden. He's switching all over the place. You know, they've shown a commitment to play a little bit smaller. CJ Miles has brought the shooting that they kind of been lacking, you know, from the three position that they thought they were going to get with Damare Carroll but never did. I mean, this team does look, I want to say rejuvenated, but this is kind of a repeated story that we've seen a few times over the last few years, and then we get to the playoffs, and something happens to Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan that's just uncomfortable for all Canadians. So I really hope that's not the case this year. I hope that OG, you know, bringing that effort defensively, giving them that floor spacing, Ibaka playing a little bit more of the five, you know, getting contributions from Poeltl and whoever else. I hope that that is a difference maker this year, but we'll see.
OG Anunoby tonight had 20 points, career high, 6 of 7 from 3. He has been an incredible rookie for the Raptors, especially where they got him in the draft. I know there's been talk about Marc Gasol, and he's not happy in Memphis right now with all that's been going on there. Is he a fit with the Raptors if there's a trade to be made there?
It's really interesting because the Raptors, I mean, the league is moving away, you know, from slower big men who are, you know, aren't as athletic as they used to be, and that's kind of Mark, right? That's him to a T. He's not the same player he was. He doesn't move the same player he was. But this is still a guy. He's added a three-point shot to his game. He can protect the rim a little bit. He's a very good passer. I think if you're the Raptors, you have to try, right? I mean, Masai kept this core together when, you know, the fan base was pretty split down the middle on what they should do. I mean, they had a real opening to kind of rebuild this year and, you know, go another way and not pay Ibaka and not pay Lowry. But they made a decision, let's give this three more years. Let's see what can happen. You know, obviously we don't know what's going on with LeBron James next year or the year after, but I think this Raptors team, if they have an opening where, you know, it's JV and a pick and maybe, you know, Norman Powell or whatever it is off the bench that they're giving up, I think you got to try because you committed to this core, to making it happen, and this is the best era of Raptors basketball. You know, as much as everyone thinks you can just tear it down, tank for a couple years, get a couple good draft picks, Sacramento, Minnesota, and Orlando have been doing it for a decade, and what's come of it? I think if you have a chance to bring Mark in at a reasonable price, add him to Lowry, DeRozan, and hopefully don't give up OG. Just whatever you do, don't give up OG. Add him to that core. I think you do it. You take your shot and, you know, test LeBron James with, you know, a big man that he hasn't really seen in the playoffs before.
You're preaching to the choir here with that, Josh, as Vancouver Canucks fans constantly asked to just trade away every single asset that this team has anyways. But yes, works the same in the NBA, sort of. Thanks for doing this, Josh, as always, man. Have a happy holiday season. Appreciate it.
To you as well. Thanks.
There he is, Josh Eberle of Hoop Mag, and you can follow him on Twitter at Josh Eberle, and really for an NBA follow, there's not many better than Josh. He's just always, constantly, he's got takes, he's got stats, he's got discussion points. For an NBA Twitter follow, Josh Eberle is among the best, especially a guy who's Canadian, is in Calgary and just loves the NBA, loves basketball, and can have a basketball chat with him any day. At Josh Eberle, E-B-E-R-L-E-Y, is where you can follow him on Twitter. Dan Riccio, Sportsnet tonight, Sportsnet 650 Vancouver, your home of the Canucks, who take on San Jose tomorrow. We'll get to some Canucks talk in just a little bit. Got a text at our text line, 650-650, responding to our snowstorm chat about the winter tires. Scott in Abbotsford says, hey, it's not easy to get snow tires for the Lambo.
No, he makes an excellent point. He makes an excellent point. Scott, I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. I drive a Lambo myself.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, you're the talent.
Yes. The talent.
So, I mean, I know exactly where Scott's coming from. I mean, I drive a little Mazda Protege, but I used to have a Ford truck. Little half-ton Ford truck. And you know, you like you have to have snow tires. Like if you want to do anything, that thing's going to be light as anything. You have to have them. You can't go, I'm in a truck. There was a nice guy. I talked to a nice guy yesterday, and he said, oh, yeah, no, I don't get them. I have a Jeep. And I said, like, I'm thinking to myself, your point, you just shot yourself in the foot by suggesting that a Jeep doesn't need snow tires.
I love the people, the person who says, you have that winter tire, like, small talk conversation, and they're like, so do you get winter tires? Where do you get them from? Oh, no, you know, I just have all seasons.
Oh, my God.
Like, all seasons do not work for Canadian winters.
All Seasons was a marketing gimmick that was brought, it was invented by, like, I don't know who it was, Firestone or something. And they're like, you know what? We'll just call them, better yet, we'll call them All Weathers.
Yeah. We got the All Weather tire.
Those are
just
summer
get
tires.
Get you through anything.
Those are improved summer tires, people. That's all they are.
They still don't work, especially once they lose a little bit of tread. Yeah, forget about it.
I guarantee you, we've got to have the tire experts. People who understand tire technology a heck of a lot better than you or I do. I would text us, call in.
Yeah, 604-280-0650. Tire experts, we need you to tell us why All Seasons are the worst, because that guy at your Christmas party or that guy at whatever, your office, that guy or girl that just says, oh, yeah, I got All Seasons. Yell at them. Say, All Seasons don't count. Those aren't winter tires. They don't get you through a winter storm. Okay, I digress. But even then, there's the people that have winter tires but think that automatically the winter tires just allow them to do the craziest stuff on the road. Like, you've got an SUV and you've got winter tires, and maybe you have 4x4. All of a sudden, you think you can drive through anything. So even in the worst snowstorm, there's like 10 centimeters on the ground, and you think you can just blast your way down the highway or climb up any hill or whatever. Like, the rules don't apply to you because you are equipped. Like, no, you still have to drive to the conditions. I don't know why I'm getting so worked up about this.
I appreciate the fact that you're basically channeling me at this point. I love it.
But you know what? Like, I also saw the take quite abundant today that Vancouver just can't handle snow. And I think every city, when there's a big snowstorm, people like don't realize how to drive.
No, in fact, there was an ice storm last year from Montreal, and this is a place that you consider to be as prepared as anywhere, any major metropolitan area on the planet, of buses and just sliding down ice sheets. Oh, it's one of the best videos.
But even in Toronto, like, a little bit of snowfall, and you could just expect the worst gridlock anywhere. So it's not immune to Vancouver. Everybody gets a little crazy when the white stuff starts coming down. It's Dan Riccio. We'll have to delay the power rankings for a moment. Mo Moten's going to join us after the top of the hour. We'll get his take on the NFL power hierarchy and where it's moving right now amongst teams, because there's a lot of really good teams and a lot of really bad ones. But we want to look at the top and who's trending towards the playoffs as maybe a Super Bowl contender. It's Dan Riccio. It's Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 650.